The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
On today's show, we are going to dig into the email bag and answer a few more questions that we've got from listeners. I believe we've got some questions on Social Security and at least one follow-up question from last week's podcast where we spoke with someone live on the phone and did our best to answer a few things. And there was one small detail that we were going to research. We've researched that and have some clarification on what can happen when spouse passes away with a 401k and you've inherited that as a spouse. What are your options at that point? And there was we were a little uncertain as to all of the options. We knew a couple options were available, but we'll get you up to date on what we found there. And then whatever else we dig in the bag and pull out, we'll talk about. So Jim is here. He's going to turn on his microphone and we'll get going.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you hear me? Because I can't hear me.
I can hear you.
Actually,
I turned your mic down because it was a little overloaded last time. So,
testing. Oh, I hear me now.
You hear you now?
Can you hear me now?
I hear you now.
I hear you.
Okay.
Welcome, listeners. This is the Retirement and IRA Show, technically the Q&A version of the Retirement and IRA Show. We are working. We got new logos coming, so you'll see them on iTunes and Android soon. But little guy laying in a hammock with headphones on, listening to the Retirement and IRA Show, I assume.
Really?
So one logo will say Q&A, which will let listeners know this is a show where we're going to be answering listeners' questions. I mean, last week we got three callers, didn't we? That was a record.
Something like that. It was
a record, three callers on one show.
We're probably not going to get that today because we are actually recording this at an odd time. This
yes.
is a Wednesday since Monday was Labor Day. We weren't in the studio to broadcast live at that point. So we are broadcasting live here at noon on Mountain Time on Wednesday, September 4th.
Oh, look at me.
September 4th, it looks like.
5th.
It's the 5th already.
Today's
wow, the
wow.
month Months is flying,
flying by.
So you'll be able to, most of you are going to be listening to this on the podcast as it replays once it's posted online. But if any live listeners drop in, they notice that we're broadcasting, we welcome them.
Right.
But
this is the Q&A, so we're going to we got a lot of Q's, and we're hopefully going to provide a lot of A's today. I have counted. You probably don't want to hear this,
no.
But we're at 23 questions in the Q.
Wow. Okay.
So we've got a lot of A lot of Q-ing. A lot of A's to do. should we go back to your 10 words or less answers?
Maybe. And we can knock out half of those today, maybe.
Probably. Or if I just shut up, right? But we're also going to be coming out, and not this week because it was a shortened week. Chris and I usually record on Mondays, and Monday was a holiday. We are coming out with the EDU, the education show. And it's not to say I won't take one of our 23 Qs, Chris, and answer one on the EDU show, but that will be some of these answers that require really deep drilling in, and I'll get into really a lot of the nuances of the topics that we hope to cover. Whereas on the Q&A show, we're going to try, and this is going to be hard for me, but I'm really going to try, Chris, to be more pithy and not delve as deep in. You know, because I listen to, like, Dave Ramsey, who sometimes says good things and more often than not doesn't. But sometimes he's, not sometimes, the guy's much more successful than our podcast. But you ever notice he really just answers one little thing, and I'll be sitting there saying, oh, no, but what, and he doesn't get into the holes. He doesn't go.
I don't know. I think maybe we got to strike a balance here, because I think a lot of people do listen because we get into some
Because we get
of the
into
details,
the holes. So. All right. Well, it's just that with 23 Qs.
Might need to. Trim
Speed
it down
up.
A little bit, yeah. And some of the cues might be related, so maybe we can answer something and we'll realize, oh, we answered this one already.
Well, let's see how many we can get through today. So. But before we start getting into our cues, be on the lookout for the new Q&A show and the new EDU show. You're going to be able to tell the difference by the logo on iTunes and Apple Music Service, or not Apple, what is it? The other phone there, not Apple.
Android.
Androids.
So the Google Play
Google
Store.
Play, that's it. You'll be able to tell, according to Julia, you'll be able to tell by the logo what show it is. But she hopes every Thursday, once this is up and running, hopefully in another 2 weeks, every Thursday is going to be the EDU show made available, and every Saturday or Sunday will be the Q&A show made available. So it'll be two shows a week. That's what we are striving for. This week being a holiday week kind of screwed things up. Okay, before we jump into 23 Qs, I have another A I want to give from last week's show. Remember we had a live caller?
Yes.
We actually had three live
Forget
callers.
Forget who it was, but we'll call him George, like we always do.
This was a Georgette, but that's okay. Remember the woman who passed away and inherited her husband's 401k?
Well, the husband passed away.
That's what I said, didn't I?
You said the woman who passed away.
No, she didn't die. The husband died.
Right, but you said the woman who passed away.
Oh, did I?
Yes.
Oh,
I'm
God.
Just clarifying for everyone.
Okay.
But
that's
person,
not a gymism. That was just a misstatement.
Wasn't her.
No, it was the daughter of her.
Thought it was the son. I guess I better go back and listen to the show.
Oh, no,
everyone
it was.
Were,
it
everyone
was.
On
Actually,
the show
no,
last time
it was
were
the
males.
Son-in-law.
There it is.
It was the son-in-law.
That's son-in-law.
I spoke to the daughter of
on
the
phone.
Woman. Who married the son-in-law who called the show.
Got it. We're invested completely in this entire family.
Exactly, at this point. Anyways, the long and the short of it is, as we did some research, I mentioned last week that I thought there wouldn't be a problem unless the 401k specifically wouldn't allow it for the woman to keep the money at the 401k, the elderly woman who inherited, it was $1.4 million, inherited $1.4 million from her deceased husband, originally wanted to leave it at the 401k. And I said, I don't think there would be a problem unless the 401k says no. And they have the right not to allow that. That's what I thought, but I did say I would research it.
Yes, and I wasn't clear on the rule either, this particular
and
specific rule.
Do we have a wah-wah-wah-wah sound effect?
No.
Don't play that annoying buzzer.
This?
Don't play that. That's annoying. You got to get that wah-wah-wah-wah.
Okay.
That's a I'll pretty good up. One for you messed up.
Okay, this one works.
True. Now, you know how many listeners are not listening anymore because that's beeping in their head? But the long and the short of it is I found it is actually the IRS and the government that prevents you from doing that. So I got a hold of the Ed Slott Group and let them know. For those who don't know, Ed Slott is probably the preeminent, or one of the preeminent. I think Natalie Choate is equally as smart as Ed. She doesn't have the marketing budget of Ed, but she's funny. She's unbelievably smart in mm-hmm. this. And you've seen her speak, and yeah. I see her all the time speak. And then there's Ed Slott, who just is a powerhouse in IRAs, but also has one hell of a good PR budget because everyone mm-hmm. has heard of Ed Slott. I have been studying under the Ed Slott group for going on 9 years now. I think I got one more year before I hit my 10th anniversary with him. So I got a hold of the group, Chris, and explained the situation. And lo and behold, it came to my attention. And I never knew this. The government prevents you specifically in IRC code 402. They will not let a spousal beneficiary roll an inherited account into a qualified plan. A qualified plan, folks, is essentially a 401k style account. Right. We call them, in the industry, we call them qualified. So we're talking 401ks here. What is the key term there? Rollover, is it not?
Right, which is just the term that's used for 401ks when you move from one to another. In the IRA world, there's some slightly different lingo that we
transfers.
Use. There's direct transfers.
Transfer. Correct.
And rollovers are actually a slightly different thing just from the mechanism that happens. But in a 401k, no matter how the transfer happens, it's still considered a rollover.
Even if it goes directly, it's still considered right. a rollover. And IRC, Internal Revenue Code 402, specifically excludes a spouse beneficiary from rolling inherited assets into a qualified plan.
So it's even more restrictive than what we mentioned we were worried about before, which was having her open a 401k at her husband's, her deceased husband's employer's plan.
In her name.
Not only is that prohibited, but the wording of this means that she can't even, if she happened to be employed herself, which she's not, but if she were and had a 401k at her plan, at her employer, she wouldn't be able to roll it into her own 401k.
No. You cannot.
That's what this
roll.
Wording means. Mm-hmm. You cannot roll it into another qualified account at all.
And that's why the Ed Slott group said when she inherits the 401k, if she wants the account in her name instead of an inherited account, she could keep it an inherited account or a beneficiary 401k if the 401k allowed. And I actually got on the phone with the 401k provider. It was a three-way call between the daughter, the mother, and myself last week. And the 401k would allow her to have an inherited 401k. Mm-hmm. But they would not allow, and for obvious reasons now, it's not allowed by law, they would not allow her to have her own 401k at the 401k place. And that's what I recommended the woman do because of the way the beneficiary designations would work. If she kept it as an inherited 401k, and now we know why this 401k wouldn't let her do it, it's the IRC code specifically excludes a spousal beneficiary from rolling into a qualified account. Well, when she closes the husband's account and moves it into her own 401k, if that was allowed, it would have been considered a rollover. And you are not allowed to do that. So that's why the 401k company was, excuse me, the 401k provider was saying, you can open an inherited 401k, that is okay, but you can't open your own. You can't open your own because it's specifically barred in section 4, IRC section 402. Now that said, when I was on the phone with the wife, excuse me, with the mother, the daughter, and the 401k providers, they were very friendly. I won't mention who the 401k provider is. The gentleman was helpful. And he said, you can leave it as your own inherited 401k. We'll allow that. And I counseled against that because she is 80, she's either 82 or 84. I don't have the single life table in front of me, Chris, and we really need to have that up here. You could either look it up, or I believe it's probably going to be somewhere around 12 years. Do you have the single life table there?
I'd have to look it up here.
But What that means is when you act as a beneficiary, folks, of a retirement account, in other words, you are not moving the retirement account into your own retirement account. You're keeping it as a beneficiary account, or it's often called an inherited account. Beneficiary or inherited account can be used interchangeably here. You are forced to using the single life table. Do you know what the single life table of an 84-year-old is, Chris?
Life expectancy factor 8.1, actually.
Of an 84-year-old?
84-year-old.
She would actually have to use 85, because you have to use the year after death. So what's
77.6.
7.6. So what does all this mean in English? If this woman, folks, had kept the 401k as an inherited 401k, and I believe she's 84, but she might be 82, but let's just say in my example she's 84. The government says you go to the single life table beginning the year after you inherit it. Mm-hmm. So next year she would be 85 if she's 84 today. The single life table was 7.6?
Yes.
So that means she would have to have taken $1.4 million mm-hmm. and divide by 7.6. That's a pretty damn big number. It I don't is. Have my calculator with me.
$184,211.
Would have to come out next year. Now, the following year, let's just say the account maintained value, it rose even though they took out that much. Next year, you divide by 6.6, and then the following year, 5.6, and then 4.6. And you can see the amount of money that has to come out of this account would get bigger and bigger and bigger every year and then be totally gone in 7.6 years. That's if she kept it as an inherited account. But if she moved it to her own account, and we already explained you are not allowed to move it to your own inherited 401k because the tax code specifically excludes rollovers into a qualified plan, and the movement of any 401k is considered a rollover. So she has no choice but to move it to an inherited IRA. That will allow her to use her own life expectancy from the uniform lifetime table. Do you have that divisor handy by any chance? You should have knew I was going to ask you that one.
And I thought it was on the same web page, but it's not.
Just so. Google uniform lifetime table.
Okay.
Now you're going to see, folks, this divisor is going to be a little bit smaller than 7.6 because they actually use the remaining life expectancy of you, or in this case, this 84-year-old woman, and someone 10 years younger than her. And they use it as a double life expectancy. So the divisor is going to be a little bit better on the uniform table. But it's not just how much RMDs she's going to be forced to take out, Chris, that's an issue here. If she left it as an inherited 401k, remember a brother-in-law shared with us on the call that she really felt an affinity to keep the money where the husband had it, her deceased husband. If she did do that, the 401k would have allowed it. Her RMDs would have been quite large. As Chris and I already explained, the single life table for an 85-year-old is 7.6. And then you divide by 6.6 the following year and 5.6. So you can see in just about 8 years, there would have been no money left in this account. It would have all been distributed and taxed. But the other issue would have been if she named her children to inherit the account. If she died, Chris, those children would be what are known as successor beneficiaries. Not a primary or contingent beneficiary. On an inherited account, the beneficiaries are called successor beneficiaries. So let's just say in my example, the woman did leave it as an inherited IRA, Chris. She did start taking out these massive RMDs, and she died 4 years into it.
Mm-hmm.
Now the divisor in year four is 3.6 because it's going down.
Right.
And let's just say her 50-year-old daughter inherited it. What does her 50-year-old daughter need to do as a successor beneficiary?
She has to pick up where those RMD calculations left off. She, exactly. She doesn't get to start over using her own age.
3.6.
Right.
So she would have to take what could be a $800,000 IRA at that point and divide by 3.6, and the following year 2.6, and the following year 1.6, and you can see within 4 years of inheriting the account, it's closed. So you never want to leave an IRA if you can, or a 401k, as a successor beneficiary. Instead, if the woman moves it to an IRA, which is what she ended up doing, she moved it to an IRA in her name. So if she moves it to an IRA in her name, she can now name her daughter not as a successor beneficiary, Chris, but as a primary beneficiary. And let's pretend her daughter is 50. Let's back up. If you have the uniform lifetime table, mm-hmm. what would the divisor be for an 85-year-old? Instead of 7.6, what would it be?
14.8. Huge difference.
Big difference. So what does that mean, folks? It means that this woman, as an 85-year-old, instead of having to take out 180-something, she'd have to take out what?
About half of that, 94,595. So 95,000.
About half.
About half.
Mm-hmm. And then the following year, she goes back to the uniform lifetime table. She doesn't subtract one from that.
Right. It doesn't go to 13.8. Right. It goes, for an 86-year-old, it's 14.1.
So it's a little less.
Yeah.
And it gets better and better the older you get.
Yep.
So the RMD tables, if it's your retirement account, never reach zero and end. And it becomes very favorable to you relative to a 7.6, which becomes 6.6, which becomes 5.6 and 4.6. You can see a huge difference. In year two, it would have been 6.6 as opposed to 14.1 as the divisor. Huge difference. So that's one of the reasons I wanted her to move the money. It would be smaller RMDs as her own IRA. But let's take this one step further and say she does pass away in 4 years and she does leave her 401k to her 54-year-old daughter. What would the divisor be, Chris, for a 55-year-old on the uniform lifetime table? And why did I choose
50? Well, the uniform table in the IRS publication doesn't start until 70. So let me back up here.
Oh, excuse me, it wouldn't be the... Well, it would be.
It'd be back to the single.
Because the daughter can... You'd have to go to the single life table of a 50-year-old, not a uniform. I'm sorry.
The uniform is in the...
Totally different. Uniform would be for the mother. The daughter would use the single life.
So I have to scroll back up for a 50-year-old.
54-year-old.
54-year-old.
Excuse me, 55.
Well, right, because 4 years have elapsed. 55-year-old, the divisor is 29.6.
29.6, folks, instead of the daughter having to use 3.6 if the account was never moved. There's a huge difference between being named a successor beneficiary of an inherited 401k or IRA and a primary beneficiary of someone's existing IRA. So by the 84-year-old mother moving the $1.4 million to her own IRA, we know she can't leave it as her own 401k. Section 402 specifically excludes that. By the mother moving it to her own inherited IRA, excuse me, her own personal IRA, she can name the daughter as a primary beneficiary. And as a primary beneficiary, the daughter, who in my example has aged 4 years and inherits the account at 54, gets to use the single life expectancy table of a 55-year-old. You use the table beginning in the year after you inherit it. She would have a 20-point-something divisor, you said?
29.6.
29, almost 30 years.
Yeah.
And as a 55-year-old, I like to see that. I got 30 more years to go.
There you go. So we actually, now that we've pretty much cleaned that up, we have a live caller, even though we don't normally broadcast at this point.
Caller.
I didn't either. So we actually do have a live caller. So let me let Lauren know to send them over. I believe it's a Georgette, but we will find out in just a second. Let me send
Do we
a
know what state? Are they from Kentucky?
I don't know. We'll have to ask her as soon as she comes over. We'll ask her as soon as it hits the airwaves here. It's usually pretty quick. So this question is an FDIC coverage question about laddered CDs. So luckily I have some
Did
info on that. You might have
polish
some info,
up on your so. FDIC insurance?
Yeah, I'm good on that. So.
All right.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Retirement IRA Show. Can you hear us on the phone here?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
We can. And we're going to refer to you, if you've listened to the show for a while, you know, we're going to call you Georgette to protect your anonymity.
Yes.
So, Georgette, welcome to the show. And I could tell by your phone call, it looks like you might be a Colorado resident. Is that true?
I am a Colorado resident. Okay. I'm currently in Arizona right now where it's really hot, though.
Okay.
Have you ever been to Kentucky?
Jim's all worried about moving to Kentucky.
I have.
So. Oh, give him your opinion
it
of Kentucky.
Beautiful.
Repeat that again so Chris can hear it.
Mm-hmm. Lexington is beautiful.
Did you hear that?
What time of the year were you there?
I was there in the fall.
It is beautiful in the fall.
It's beautiful in the fall.
Do you know?
Yeah.
Do you know
I know it's not...
Do you know how it is in the summer?
I think it's pretty hard.
It's hot and sweaty. So,
all right,
pretty things to look at.
I'll just live there in the fall.
Perfect.
Okay.
So, Georgette, back to your question. Why don't you describe what you're wondering here?
Well, I've kind of been looking into like CD laddering or bond laddering, and I kind of wanted to know the pros or cons about it. One of the, I think, features of a CD laddering is if you buy them through a brokerage that they're FDIC insured if they buy them. And I'm just kind of thinking about in terms of very safe places to put a portfolio that gets just a little bit of interest that will keep up with inflation. And the second part of that would be I think there's groups that will help you. I can't remember what it stands for. It's something like CDARS, C-D-A-R-S. And I don't know if you know anything about those, or I think they will set up and handle laddering for you.
They'll just kind of coordinate, and so as the CDs mature, they handle dealing
with
that and that sort of thing.
Okay. Exactly.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that particular entity, but as far as the FDIC insurance goes, are you imagining these CDs being held within a IRA, or are they just going to be standalone money that came from
within an IRA?
Okay. So what a lot of people don't realize the way FDIC insurance works, a lot of people see that sticker on the window that says $250,000 of FDIC coverage. And most people who just understand the surface level of FDIC coverage think that means up to $250,000 that I have there in all my accounts, that's how much protection I have. But it's actually more than that. It's $250,000 per person per account type. And the account types are things like single owner, joint owner, business accounts, retirement accounts are separate. So believe it or not, you could have $250,000 in a checking account that would be covered as a sole person under that coverage, and another $250,000 of coverage on your retirement accounts held at that bank. So it isn't just a hard $250,000 for one person. It's one person per account type. So if you're going to put them in, so essentially the reason why I bring this up is you can exclude at that bank any other deposits you have when you're figuring out how much is covered. So if you've got checking and savings accounts there, you can just look the other way on those. That's going to be treated as its own account type and have its own limits. The CD ladder is as long as it's in an IRA at the bank, will have $250,000 of FDIC coverage. So in the combined, all the CDs that you have inside that retirement account, as long as it doesn't exceed $250,000, you've got the FDIC coverage. Doesn't mean that money over that is necessarily at great risk, because banks generally don't fail. But if you're really, really worried about it and want to make sure you have that FDIC coverage, it's that $250,000 limit on the IRA.
So if you had, with like in a laddering system, let's say you had five CDs of $60,000 each. Let me see what that's totally.
The first $250,000, so that's $300,000.
Yeah.
So you'd be $50,000 over, which doesn't mean you're doomed. It just means the first $250,000 is going to have the backing of FDIC. The $50,000 on top of that may be subject to loss if there is a bank failure and the FDIC chooses not to extend coverage. There actually have been times in the past where the FDIC has stepped up in times of financial distress and through coordination with the Fed and the Treasury Department actually announced they're going to cover beyond what they're legally obligated to do so to kind of calm people down. Now, you can't count on that, but it does happen. It has happened in the past. So, but if you got 300, 250 is, you know, backed by the institution as well as the FDIC. The 50 on top of that would just be backed by the institution and its ability to cover that for you in essence.
How about in terms of laddering, because a CD ladder might have that FDIC protection. A bond laddering is not going to have that.
Correct.
Are there any pros for going to a bond ladder versus a CD ladder that you
I haven't, that you see? Jim might have dealt with a client with a bond ladder, and he can make some comments. My general comment would be that the bond ladder is going to be a little riskier than FDIC-covered CDs. So the pros and cons to that, as is typical in the finance investment world, when you expose yourself to greater risk, you obtain higher promised payments. In other words, those the bond ladder should pay you a little higher interest. If you're staying really safe in the bond world, you can certainly construct a bond ladder that's riskier versus safer. But if you're going to try to stay on the safe end, even the safest of the bonds will be slightly more risky than FDIC-covered CDs. So you should enjoy higher interest payments, but you open yourself up to the potential of a failure of some kind and the bonds defaulting, and they wouldn't be backed by FDIC coverage. But if you diversify your bond holdings and you're choosing really safe bonds, the likelihood of that is very low, even though it is slightly more than the chance of loss in an FDIC-covered bank account.
Particularly if you got something like investment-grade bonds or government bonds?
Well, investment grade is actually a wide range of bond credit gradings, so it's not either investment grade or non-investment grade. There's, about 10 layers of creditworthiness in the investment grade area. So you'd want to look at the very top, the very best of the investment graded bonds as far as their credit rating goes if you're wanting to stay safe. And government bonds, again, we used to just kind of throw government bonds into this one big basket and consider them safe. But if you're talking about non-federal government bonds, so non-treasury bonds, now you have to look carefully at the county or state or city that's issued these things because some of those are in deep financial trouble. And just because they happen to be government bonds, they aren't necessarily particularly safe. So if you're talking treasury bonds, that's a whole different story because, of course, the federal government has the ability to print money, so the likelihood of default is near zero.
Okay.
And if I can just add a little bit, Georgette, what is it is your risk here that you're very concerned about? Are you worried about banks defaulting? Are you worried about companies defaulting?
I'm actually calling in on behalf of my mom because this is something that maybe we're thinking of rather than a very safe kind of index fund or some sort of like fund that we could put it in. She's actually was one of the people who's actually used and benefited from FDIC when a bank failed. And so it's a priority for her to make sure that she gets some protection of that.
Okay.
Her accounts are over the 250.
So in that case, she would want to look at CDs if she's used FDIC insurance before, if she's looking for something very safe, if she really values that. You're not going to get that in a bond, and you'll get the risk of principal movement of the price of the bond. And the bond market on laddering bonds, it's a very murky market. It dwarfs the stock market. Stocks get all the attention, but the bond market is huge. Dwarfs the stock market. But it is murky. It is difficult to understand what you're actually paying because there's yield spreads. In other words, if your mom wanted to make $60,000 ladders, companies don't sell $60,000 bonds. They don't have the time for that. They'll sell a massive $100 million, $200 million, $500 million bond to Wall Street, and Wall Street breaks it up. And every part of Wall Street that gets a hold of that bond and breaks it up keeps some of the interest. It's called the yield spread. So the bank, the company may issue a bond initially paying 3%, but by time it's broken down and given to your mom, she might be getting 2%. And she never knew the original bond is paying 3%. That's called the yield spread. But then you also have to deal with what is known as the bid and the ask on the bond market. How much they're willing to sell it to you for and how much they're willing to buy it from you on. And those spreads and differences can be quite large. Now, people say, well, if you hold the bond to maturity, you're all set. Sure, but bonds can be callable perhaps. So before it matures, it's being called. Or your mom is faced with the need that she needs the money. And if interest rates have risen before the bond is maturing, she could be forced to sell at a loss. So I don't think a bond ladder is going to do what your mom truly wants, and it probably is far more expensive and murky than you ever imagined because of the commissions on the sale, the yield spread, the bid and the ask. It is the government is trying to rein in the bond market and give it the transparency that the stock market has. But it hasn't been successful. It's not even close.
No. The other thing I'll mention, since you said you were concerned about being over the limits, you can place and build your CD ladder, if that's the ultimate goal here, and that's what you decide to do, and spread it out among different institutions. So you could get total coverage over essentially an unlimited amount if you're willing to spread it out among different. Just make sure. And any banker who's competent will tell you of this. The FDIC coverage is by institution, and it isn't per branch of the institution. So you can't just open it at three different branches of the same bank. It has to be different banking entities entirely in order to get fresh new $250,000 limits.
Now, one thing I want to say in case you – are you guys dealing with an advisor already?
No.
Okay. Because you might find some people trying to sell you what is known in the industry as brokered CDs. And they're going to have an advantage and disadvantages to traditional CDs that you go buy on your own. A brokered CD will still be issued by a bank, but much like bonds, they issue a massive one to Wall Street. Right. Wall Street then breaks it up into smaller CDs. There'll still be FDIC insurance on your smaller brokered CD, but a broker could sell you five different brokered CDs in one account from five different banks, giving you five different FDIC insurances.
Oh.
Yeah. To the brokered CDs. I don't think insurances is proper verbiage there. But there's huge problems with brokered CDs, and you got to be very careful with them, and I can't say I'm a huge fan of them. Again, there's separate fees involved, sometimes commissions on the purchasing of them. You may not get quite as high a yield because of the yield spread. Wall Street's got to make their money somehow as they break the CD down. They're also callable. So you might be forced to sell the CD before it matures, or usually maybe for the first year or two, it might be callable. So you have to really make sure you know what you're getting yourself into. Whenever you add a brokerage on top of things, yeah, they can make things easy. So in one account, you can get multiple bank offerings. That's nice and appealing. But there are costs and limitations and complexity involved in brokered CDs. So I didn't know if you were calling and wondering about brokered CDs. You can hear about them all the time in my industry, brokered CDs. We don't sell them. I'm not a broker. I don't want to sell and make commissions off of things. So I don't sell brokered products. But I'm not bashing that business model, Chris, mm-hmm. and listeners out there who sell these.
Just another selection.
It could be an easier way to mm-hmm. put a ladder with multiple institutions, but make sure you really peel the onion back of the brokered CD and try to find out how much the broker is earning. I doubt they'll tell you, but you can ask, what's the yield spread? I mean, how much are you guys making in the interest off of this? And is the CD callable? Am I going to run into problems with you guys calling this CD before it matures and you ruin my ladder?
Huh. Yeah. And you can.
Those are good questions.
Yeah. And you could independently engage with a financial advisor who is, you know, knows about building a CD ladder and could then just give you advice on what to do. And then you go to the banks of your choice to build it. So you don't have to do the brokerage CD. You can see, since it's a one-stop shop kind of a situation, where it might be a little easier if that's what you're looking for.
That,
but you can still,
that's
it's
main,
not too difficult to do
on
your own.
On a brokerage CD, yeah. The only advantage to me, Chris, and you can add what you feel, is the convenience of having everything in one account.
Yeah.
But whenever you get another player, and it's going to be two players involved in a brokered CD, there's the brokerage company the broker works for, and then there's the broker.
Right.
And they're both being paid, and that money ain't coming from the bank that issued the CD. So it's coming from you, so you got to make sure you understand the nuances. And when more people get involved, there's more cost. But people like to pay for convenience, Chris.
Yeah.
So
just make sure it's worth it.
Do you know if there's any company that would allow you to do what brokered CDs do, but just be like a clearinghouse for multiple independent banks who want to sell their CDs?
I'm not.
That
I
would be a brilliant
dealt much with
app to come up with,
yeah,
or something.
That's probably true. Yeah, just kind of a low-cost brokered CD supplier.
Kind of like you act as a middleman for banks instead of going through brokerage houses to allow in one account to see multiple CDs at multiple banks, but you're using just one middleman to go directly to the banks instead of going through a broker.
Idea,
someone has to have come up with that by now.
If not,
well, might be the CDAR that I'm talking about.
Maybe.
But
be careful, it's not brokered CDs. I just and again, I'm not bashing brokered CDs. It's just when you start getting to all these different levels, you might not be getting all the interest. And in these low interest rate environments, the fewer people who have their hand in your pot, the more you're going to get.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's all I'm trying to say. But brokers,
may I ask?
Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead. No, this is all really helpful in terms of understanding kind of the hidden fees that can be associated and things like callable. Callable is a concern. I hadn't even thought about that. My another kind of product I was thinking of, since my mom is older, is as an income stream, just going ahead and buying an annuity. I think it will be a better return given her age. Is that true?
Well, our general response to that is we'd have to know what your mom needs the money to do for her to recommend what to do with the money. So typically the blanket answer from our point of view on annuities is you buy an annuity for annuity income. So if she's looking for a regular stream of income, particularly one that the most attractive usually when you're dealing with an insurance company later in life is an annuity that goes on till the end of your life at least, so you at least have this known amount that's coming in, annuities are a great product for that kind of an application. When you start to stray away from that need much, then you really have to understand what type of annuity you're getting into and if it's really accomplishing your goal in the best way that could happen.
Is your mom looking for income or principal safety?
Yeah.
Well, principal safety.
Okay.
That's her first goal, but if there was...
How old is...
A return isn't... A big priority
for
her.
How old is your mom?
She's 81.
81. Because there are principal-protected annuities.
Yeah.
They're called MIGAs, multi-year guaranteed annuities. They're going to work just like a bank CD.
Other than FDIC coverage.
Right. There's no FDIC insurance coverage, so you buy MIGAs from highly rated insurance companies.
Right.
You don't buy them from Joe's Used Insurance. So you would get them, and I don't want to name the companies, but there are some A+, A++ rated companies that have been around for hundreds of years, And in my opinion, they're not going anywhere. But a MIGA is issued by these insurance companies. And you can buy a 3-year, 4-year, 5-year, all the way up to 10-year. I've never seen beyond 10, Chris, but it wouldn't surprise me if some are greater than 10. You don't see a 1 or a 2-year MIGA. But what MIGAs do is they stand for Multi-Year Guaranteed Annuity, MYGA. They work just like a bank CD, except they don't have FDIC insurance, but they pay more interest than a bank CD.
Right.
And you can buy the MIGAs at individual companies if you want to spread the risk out. I find most are sold in odd years beginning with 3. So in other words, 3, 5, 7, and then 10. And I know 10's not odd. They kind of skip over 9. You can find 4-6-year ones, so you could literally get a 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. But most are sold in 3, 5, 7, and 10.
Mm-hmm.
And the interest rates, like on a 3-year right now, are probably north of 3%. A 5-year is probably around 3.5%, 3.8%. We're not talking huge, but they'll have fairly low minimums. You probably will see minimums in the $10,000 range all the way up to a few million. And you can ladder them at different companies. Mm-hmm. They don't cost anything to buy. That's the key I want to point out here. Now, you do have to go to an insurance person, not a bank, to buy these. The way the insurance companies make their money is purely on the yield spread. And we've talked about this on the show in the past, Chris. So a lot of times you'll read articles like from our, what's his name again, that Ken Fisher guy. I hate annuities and so should you.
Right.
Now, he hates annuities because he's an investment manager. His firm is an RIA that manages money. And, of course, he hates annuities because he wants the money with him. But the annuities that he bashes in his ads, and I support his ads on those annuities, Chris, are variable annuities.
Yeah.
But he makes it sound like all annuities. And on a MIGA, no, if he was here, I would get Ken Fisher to admit, yeah, you're right, Jim, they kind of work like a bank CD. He could still hate them, but
right. He doesn't want you to put it in the bank CD either.
He wants you to give him his money. What I'm saying is these annuities truly don't cost your mom one red cent, because the insurance company is going to make their money off of a yield spread. So if they're going to promise your money your mother 3%, they hope to earn more. But that said, there's some caveats and catches to them. First, unlike a bank CD, which will charge you a penalty if you close your bank CD before it matures, but it's usually 3 months interest and that's it. Your principal is always returned to you no matter when you close it.
You'll never get less than you put in. You might lose interest that you earned if you redeem it early, but you'll never get less than what you put in.
But in a MIGA, you will get less. If you close the annuity before it matures, they will charge you a penalty. So your mom's got to understand that. That's why they pay more in interest. They feel they can take your money and lock it up longer. Both the bank and the insurance company are doing the same thing with your mom's money. They're going to lend it out. So the bank is going to lend it out to probably someone in the local community. If it's a community bank, if it's a national bank, who knows where they're lending it. An insurance company is going out and lending the money mostly to governments and to companies by buying their bonds. And with a MIGA, the insurance company feels the penalty they're going to impose is going to allow them to take a little more risk with your mom's money than if it was liquid in the sense of a bank CD where they let you close it at any time. And the insurance company has to recoup their selling costs. There's going to be the money they pay to open the annuity. There's the money they pay to the agent who sold you the annuity or put your mom in it. So they got to make sure they can recoup those losses if your mom closed the annuity. That's why they put the penalty on.
Do you have an idea of the range of the penalties, how severe they are?
They can be pretty severe. I've seen them It all depends. The penalty period will last as long as the MIGA lasts. So on a 3-year, you could probably expect to pay a 7 or 8% penalty if you closed it in year one. And that drops usually in year two. And then in year three, it reaches zero.
Right.
The other thing to bear in mind with MIGAs is, and they're just like bank CDs in this realm, they're going to give your mom 30 days to decide what she wants to do before they'll renew automatically for a new term. Now, this isn't bad if your mom doesn't need the money and she's like, nope, we'll buy another 3-year or 5-year or 7-year annuity, whichever one's maturing. I want it to renew. That's not a problem. But if you do want to close it, you have to get a hold of the insurance company, as you would the bank, during that 30-day period and tell them, do not renew that annuity. Send me the money. Now, one difference with a MIGA over a CD is the MIGA, while it is in its deferral stage, is non-taxable. Whereas a CD is taxable every year, your mom earns the money. Even though she doesn't get the money out of the CD, she has to pay taxes on that interest. Inside a MIGA, it grows tax deferred. You do not have to pay taxes until you close the MIGA. If you renew the MIGA, if it renews after 3 years, it's still not taxable. The government will not tax it. Moving from one MIGA to a new MIGA is not a taxable event. So MIGAs will come with a little better tax situation if your mom's in a high tax bracket. If your mom's not in a high tax bracket, it's a moot point.
Right.
But if she's in a high tax bracket, the MIGA people will say, hey, this is an advantage of MIGAs. The bank CD people will say, well, we offer more liquidity and more flexibility than a MIGA.
And FDIC coverage.
And FDIC and coverage. So, you know, you got to weigh the two. But that's how it works. It's just another option, multi-year guaranteed annuities. They don't get much press, mostly for a couple of reasons. First, people who sell them, and we sell MIGAs, so I know what I'm talking about here, they don't pay much. So because they don't pay me much, it's not that we don't talk about them. We do. We're planners. We'll tell clients about anything. But I'm talking about insurance agents get much more if they put your mom in what is known as an indexed annuity. They tend to pay more money than a MIGA or a flexible premium annuity. Flexible premium annuities don't pay much either, but that's not appropriate in your mom's situation. MIGAs don't pay much, Chris.
Nope.
They're very little, about a 0.5%, 1%.
Yeah. They're not fancy, straightforward.
They're straightforward, simple. So a lot of insurance agents don't like to talk about them and sell them because they want to sell you more expensive products. But they're a fairly straightforward option for your mom to consider. What I like doing, and here's how I use MIGAs. If your mom was my client, I would tell her, start your bank CD ladder at 1 year. Do a 1 year, a 2 year, and a 3 year at your local bank. And then you could start to roll a 5 year into a MIGA and a 7 year into a MIGA. So you don't need to use insurance companies for everything. You want that flexibility on her shorter duration money at a bank where the worst case scenario is you're going to lose 3 months interest. Oh, horror. You're going to get her money out. But that will allow her to wait for the MIGAs to actually mature, and they will pay more. A 5 or a 7 year MIGA is going to pay more than what a bank CD is paying right now. Mm-hmm. So I would use both MIGAs and CDs if it was me being tasked with putting this ladder
together.
That's
a good point. It's not an either or. You can certainly use both.
Right. That's a good idea. Another kind of diversification of sorts.
Yeah. And gives you the liquidity of the CDs if she needs money in the short term due to some unexpected event.
And I would use highly rated MIGAs. There's been a case recently where a client counseled with me, and he decided to put his money in a low-rated MIGA. Mm-hmm. But he felt this company wasn't going to go anywhere in it was either 3 or 5 year he bought. I forgot. However, if your mom's going to go out to a 7 or a 10 year ladder and based on her age, lower rated MIGA companies will pay more than higher rated companies. An A plus or an A plus plus company, they know they can pay you less interest because their ratings are safety, what's attracting, yeah. Right. So I would encourage your mom to go with a higher rated, in her case, carrier, and that would be like a A+, and there's plenty of wonderful A+ companies, mm-hmm, and sure. There's a couple of really good A++. Not many companies get A++, but there's some out there. The problem is their MIGA rates are even lower.
Right.
I don't think you get much more for an A++ or an A+.
Right. As far as safety goes.
So, and one other thing to add, if your mom ever passed away, and I have to talk openly, if she ever did, the penalty phase of a MIGA goes away. So whoever inherits the MIGA can inherit the entire account without the penalty phase.
Oh, okay. That's good to know.
So, anyways, I would ladder
probably
both.
Way more information than Georgette was looking for, but that's what you get when you call the show here.
No, it's very helpful because I'm kind of not looking for something that's not so typical of somebody who's not looking for big returns and looking for more protection. Mm-hmm. But it would be nice to keep up with inflation.
Right.
Yeah, so I mean, if your mom was younger, I would recommend a flexible premium deferred annuity. But that's going to, the shortest one I have for a penalty period is 7 years, and it's just, I don't want to do that. It's just not appropriate. I think she should look at the lowest cost option to me is going to be CDs, and to get a little higher return, marry it to a 5 and a 7 year MIGA. You don't even have to go out to a 10 year MIGA. I would do a 7 year ladder with your mom and do year 1, 2, and depending on what a 3 year CD pays, you could start the MIGAs at 3, 5, and 7,
right,
and use a bank CD for 1, 2, 4, and 6.
Yeah.
And that's what
something
I would
like
do.
That. Yeah.
I really appreciate this. This has been very instructive for me.
Great.
So,
well, thanks a lot for calling in. We always enjoy the show more from our end when someone is live on the line that we can talk to, so we really appreciate you calling in. So hope the weather treats you well down in Arizona. It's pretty cool here today in Colorado, but still pretty nice.
Yeah, you can never pay me to live in Arizona. I'll live in Kentucky before I go bake in Arizona.
My friends in Arizona or in Colorado told me they had to put on some fleece, which seems unimaginable. Right?
Yeah, it was a chilly morning this morning. But it's going to be back near 90 by weekend, so it's short-lived.
Oh, no.
But, it was a nice chilly morning. I liked it.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully I'll get back there soon.
Yes.
Well, thanks for the call.
All right, Georgette. It's been a pleasure.
Let us know if we can do anything else for
bye-bye.
You.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was good.
That was good.
A good question.
Any call is good.
Call is good. Yeah. But, laddering, folks, I like it. And I would marry, personally, in her case, mm-hmm, I would marry the CD with the MIGAs.
Perfect.
And that CDs will give her that short-term liquidity. And remember, the ladder is always being renewed in the sense 3 years into it, the first MIGA is already maturing. And then year 4, you got a bank CD maturing. Year 5, the 5 year MIGA is already maturing. And then she can take the money if she needs it in that year. If she doesn't, for those who don't know how a ladder works, when the CD or the MIGA matures, the mom takes whatever money she needs. If she doesn't need any money, she purchases a new rung on the ladder. So she would go out and buy a new 7 year MIGA or a 7 year CD or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. And every year when the ladder is set up, money is
coming in.
Yes. Yeah. That's what laddering does.
Cool.
But don't overlook MIGAs. MIGAs are the unloved annuity out there. There's a lot of unloved
MIGAs
annuities
out there.
MIGAs and SPIAs, oh my.
Both. Yeah.
Lions and tigers and bears and MIGAs and SPIAs and DIAs, oh my. That's
right,
what we should call them.
Yeah.
And they're unloved, MIGAs, SPIAs, and DIAs, because they don't pay much.
Low commission rates, yeah.
Yeah, they're a no-frills, mm-hmm, simple annuity, but they're the ones we use the most
right,
here.
And that's the counterintuitive part of it.
Next to a flexible premium deferred annuity and some other types that I don't want to get into because you know me, I'll be on the show for another hour. We use MIGAs, SPIAs, and DIAs, oh my.
Yeah.
And they're boring, straightforward, but clients understand them and like them.
Yeah.
So I think that's what they might want to consider.
Okay.
Brokered CDs are easy too, but be very careful. There's a lot of things about brokered CDs.
Okay. So we're into the show for an hour. already, oh. Believe it or not.
Do we have? Do I don't have. No. What
continue?
Time is
we
it?
We probably don't have to.
I have a client coming in at 1:30.
It's 1 o'clock, so we.
I gotta go.
We gotta go. So.
All right, well, folks, we didn't get through the queue.
No, we ain't.
At all.
I know. That's. Oh well. It's okay.
I still have 23 queues here.
I know. We'll do a better job next week.
We're not going to take a live call?
I don't know. Maybe we'll just stop doing emails and we'll just get live calls. I mean,
did we start?
Things evolve.
Oh, we did. We did talk about the 401k.
But it was a queue from last week,
yeah.
Really.
Okay.
So we wrapped that one up. So.
All right. Well, that's it on this week's Q&A version of the Retirement and IRA Show. Next week, we promise to get through more of our 23 queues. And by then, I'll probably be up to 30.
Yep.
And we'll start making quick work of it, as they say.
Yep.
And look for the EDU version of the show, folks. That's going to come out shortly. And, of course, for everybody out there, Chris and I are live, breathing, practicing financial planners in the state of Colorado, but we work with people throughout the United States. So just like this listener was in Arizona, it doesn't matter where you are. If you're looking for impartial advice, what we call a coffee and a second opinion, reach out to us and schedule that. You can go to our website, Jim Helps. That's JimHelps.com. JimHelps.com. Go there and you can schedule your own coffee and a second opinion meeting right there on the web. And we'll give you a call. We'll chat with you. We'll answer your questions. We'll see what it is your concerns are. And that's just a service we offer. We call it a coffee and a second opinion. So don't hesitate to reach out to us as you're looking for impartial advice. If you're listening to this show, you're a do-it-yourselfer. But you've also got questions, obviously, because you're listening to the show. So reach out to us, and we might be able to help you with your questions.
Perfect. Thanks again for everybody who called. Thanks, Georgette, for calling in. We love that. Next week, if you want to call in when we're broadcasting live, our phone number is 970-530-0556. That's 970-530-0556. So we'll catch you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit JimHelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.